Hello and welcome to Take Two. I'm Mark Kermode.
And I'm Simon Mayo.
Thank you very much for subscribing. I thought Take One, which dropped a few days ago, was good. I like the festival stuff.
The festival stuff was good.
Yeah. Are you going to any other festivals?
Yes, I'm going to Latitude. I'm doing something at Latitude. And
juggling, or is your band playing? Is your band playing?
No, I think I'm doing an on stagey, you know, conversationy thing. You know, Mark talks about stuff.
Could I come?
You want to? Yeah, you're quite near to Latitude.
Yeah, so I could just sort of wander. Would I be a distraction if I?
No, yeah, you'll be an attraction.
I could sit in the front row.
Well, what, do you want to come on stage?
Could do, couldn't I?
Well, why don't you?
Well, I'll just be in the way.
Okay, no, but would you like to?
What would be funny is I could just sit there. And people would think at some stage Simon's going to get involved, and actually
I don't. You just don't. What would be really funny is if you sat there listening to Steve Wright.
Yes, tapping my toes.
That would be a very good.
But I don't listen to Radio 2 anymore, so that doesn't. That's not. I'd be listening to Greatest Hits Radio, that? which is very big in the that part of town.
It's very big.
It's on FM. That's what it is. Deborah from Tyneside. Gentlemen, your recent conversations regarding watching medical procedures on a screen reminded me of the late, great Humphrey Lyttelton. When asked, when about to have an ultrasound examination, the nurse asked him if he'd like to follow it on a monitor. He replied, "No, thank you. I never watch daytime television."
That's very good.
Which I think is...
That's very good.
It is. Martin Hennessy, Queen Elizabeth University Hospital, Glasgow. I was delighted to hear... Dr. Gupta's shout out to interventional radiologists.
Yes.
On last week's show.
Very good.
I have been a listener since 2008 and
relatively recent.
And an international interventional radiologist since 2014. And don't remember our speciality ever having been mentioned before. So big up to all the interventional radiologists. However, in the context of the show, I believe the good doctor, him inside the arteries, misrepresented us when he said we used, quote, live video x-rays. What he meant to say, of course, is that we use a series of still images arranged to create the illusion of movement at around 7.5 frames a second, if you're interested. Tickety-tonkin, down with unnecessarily big operations.
How is Charlie Kaufman these days?
I don't know, but I don't think he'll be troubling these parts anytime
soon.
He's
such a good guest, though.
If you'd like to get in touch with us about anything, correspondence@kermodeandmayo.com. Sean emails, as a brief preamble, Mark and Simon, I'm obviously a massive fan of your show and been listening very happily to the two of you for a few years. It's only now, though, I've decided to get in touch due to something I experienced recently, the profoundness of which I'm not sure I've ever felt because of a film before. Okay. I'm 18, in fact, 19 tomorrow. I'm a young aspiring filmmaker raised in a world of the internet and rubbish pop music. But most importantly, until recently, I hadn't experienced proper loss. The big initial loss that it forces you to reckon with the fragility of life and all that comes with that. I have a group of friends from America who I've known and spoken to through the internet since I was 13 or so. And one of them was called Craig. He was animated, innocent, and unapologetically himself. As well as being a couple of years younger than most of the guys in the group, he could often be a bit too much for some people and was somewhat of an easy target for mean remarks and jokes at his expense. I didn't know Craig as well as other members of the group, but we had some really good times playing online games together. When out the other night, I received the news from my strongest friend in that group that Craig had passed away, which explained why he hadn't messaged any of us in the last few months. The shock did wash over me, and initially I was very taken aback, but managed to calm myself down and continue with my night. When buying drinks for my friend and I, my mind drifted back to Craig and instantly jumped to the visuals and concepts of the film Enter the Void by Gaspar Noé, who was a guest on the program a few weeks ago. For anyone unfamiliar, the film follows a character who dies early on in the film as we see his soul wandering through the past, present and future of his life to make a choice on where it will go. Gaspar, in my opinion, can be nihilistic and overindulgent in his films, and Void is no exception. While I do not agree with some of the things that he thinks, nor do I take his apparent interpretation of the afterlife to be fact, imagining my friend Craig's soul in the same position as Oscar's, the main character of the film, made the depth and gravity of what had happened become very real. Ultimately, in that moment, the film helped me to come to terms with death and with life, for better or for worse, with far greater success than most other things things I have ever seen or listened to. This brought our group back together. After a separation, it made us realise how much we love and loved Craig. We are in contact with his father. We hope to send him something that we'll put together as a group. This email is for Craig, and I'll be thinking of him through my birthday tomorrow. And it was just interesting, just the subject that we've touched on before, that kind of interplay and intersection between movies and real life.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think there is, we keep returning to this, there is something very profound about the experience of cinema, and the language that cinema speaks can sometimes speak directly to you. And I think it's always important to remember, firstly, that all responses to movies are personal. This is why I've always said, you know, when the idea of any film criticism being definitive is completely... is wrong. You know, you can have opinions about films, but in the end, they are opinions. That is all they are. And secondly, no matter how long we've been doing this, which is a long time,
a thousand years,
you should never forget the potentially transcendent and transformative power of cinema and its ability to speak to people about often unspeakable subjects. And I genuinely think that as a medium, you know, everything else around it, that it is at its best a genuinely transcendent medium. Thank you for that email, because I think that does touch on that subject very eloquently.
Correspondence at kermanomeo.com. Jim says, midterm listener, first-time writer, former church raffle winner here. Can you be a former church?
You are a winner.
You won it.
You won it.
It's not a post which you have to sort of pass on to someone else. I'm writing with a contribution for your thought I was seeing one thing, but actually I was seeing something else.
Yeah, okay, right.
Series.
Fine. This is running and running, isn't it?
Admittedly, this is arguably not my story to tell, but is a good one, I think. A few years ago, I was working as a manager at a day service for adults with learning difficulties. One of our clients was a young non-verbal man who loved to watch bright, colourful, animated movies. Mm-hmm. One day I went to pick said client and his worker for the day up, and we were going to the movies. I asked the slightly bemused worker what they had been to see, and he said they had thought they were going to see the Postman Pat film.
Okay.
Yes. Remember, we talked about Stephen Mangan.
Stephen Mangan, thank you.
That's right.
When
Postman Pat sang, it was Ronan Keating.
That's right.
Which I think, although Stephen didn't say in the interview, was particularly annoyed about, because Stephen can sing incredibly well, and he loves his music. That was a weird film.
It was a strange experience.
Anyway, so here we have these two people going to see what they thought was a Postman Pat film. In fact, he had taken the client to see the fine but somewhat less stimulating film, The Post, about the fight for the Washington Post to uncover
which is a lot of things, but colourful isn't one of them.
No, but it's got Tom Hanks in it. It's fantastic. Anyway, this is where they uncover dirty doings by the American government in Vietnam. Worker and client had, however, sat through the whole film relatively happily. Well, so I guess Meryl Streep can still save most things. But it's important to say, if you're going to see The Post, Postman Pat is not in it.
No, he's not.
He doesn't deliver at all.
Neither he nor his black and white cat.
Early in the morning, not at all. I'm sure the schedule will be too busy with actual questions about the actual film he has just made, but don't try, don't get. You're about a week late, because it's a question for Rowan Atkinson. If there was... But nice try. But anyway, Rowan, if you're listening, maybe you can answer. If there was any opportunity, even off mic, to pass on a salutation to Mr. Rowan Atkinson, I would simply like him to know that there are now four generations of our family, and counting, who can be united in tense moments by the phrases, "his wife's a horse," and "so why the hell did he marry Gerald?" from his oft-forgotten, but very loved by us, one-man show live in Belfast, which we did talk about.
We did talk about it.
I can only imagine what it's like to have such a lasting power of laughter with one's art. Thank you for reading. Now, So why the hell did she marry Gerald is the punchline from the best man speech at the wedding.
That's right.
In which he's eulogised some other guy.
Exactly.
Anyway, so it's that kind of thing. Anyway, the whole Belfast album, I've now listened to the whole thing a couple of times, and there are a couple of references which now I think Rowan would go, maybe we should not say that.
Okay.
But it's the whole, if you want to listen to a comedy album and you have access to one of those listening banks at Apple or Spotify, then give Rowan Atkinson Live in Belfast a try.
And can I just say on the subject of comedy, what do you call Postman Pat when he's lost his job?
Pat. There you go. And I actually worked that out. That's quite good. We'll store that one up for a future laughter lift.
Yeah, you put that. They're not even listening. They're literally not even listening.
I think they've got Scala Radio on. They're just chilling out to some great classics.
We keep turning to the control box for encouraging looks. And what do we get? The tops of people's heads. They're doing the crossword.
Cardboard cutouts. I don't think there's anyone even there. So next on Take Two, One Frame Back. This is where we explore films that are connected in some way to one of this week's releases. This week, recommending Steve Carell films inspired by his reappearance as Gru in Minions, The Rise of Gru, fully reviewed in Take One, in case you missed it. Lee says, either Foxcatcher or The Big Short, both displaying a highly versatile and engaging actor, one of a very long line of comedians who have a natural gift for drama. Steve Schofield says, I really enjoyed Welcome to Marwen. That was the, and he came on the show to talk about that one, which was the sort of the Action Man animated story.
Yeah, it was a very strange film.
Chris Mansell, or Mantle, I'm not sure that anyone else in the world would jump to this one as a default, but for me, he was the heart of Richard Linklater's highly underrated Last Flag Flying. Steve French says, Little Miss Sunshine every time. Carell is fabulous alongside all the rest of the cast. One of my favourite scenes is where Carell's character meets Paul Dano's character and questions why he is not talking. So you stop talking because of Friedrich Nietzsche? Far out. Thank you, Steve. Oliver Bell.
Technically, Friedrich Nietzsche.
What did I say?
Frederick. That's fine, but Fred.
Anglicising it a bit.
There's nothing Nietzsche couldn't teach you.
About the raising of the wrist. Socrates himself was particularly missed.
Missed.
Oliver Bell says, I love Lamp. Seeking a friend for the end of the world is very underrated.
It is.
So what would you say is your one frame back and where can we go to watch it?
Well, personally, I would go for Foxcatcher because it is a genuinely eye-opening performance. I didn't know the true story of Foxcatcher beforehand, and I'm kind of aware that other people may not do. When I wrote a review of Foxcatcher for a newspaper, the newspaper put in, I was very careful about not saying where the story went, because, you know, and then they published a photograph of it, which referred to his character in Foxcatcher in a way that explained where the story was going.
Right.
So they referred to
speaking in kind of code.
No, I'm not. He's a real life person. And they said, the something, da 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 da. And, you know, like if I referred to you as the radio broadcaster, yes, Simon Mayo, or, you know, and you referred to me as the bassist, Mark Kermode, they referred to John DuPont in Foxcatcher as the something that then gave away more details of the story if you didn't know the story.
What did he say?
Well, I'm not going to tell you, because what I'm saying is,
it's like years ago.
Did you listen to any of the beginning of the sentence? The reason that the film worked for me was I didn't know the story, and I completely believed in Steve Carell's character in the way in which he played. It's John Ethel DuPont. And I was introduced to him through the movie. And then as the movie took darker and darker turns, I was kind of led by the hand by his performance. And the reason I thought it was remarkable, I think I compared it at the time to Robin Williams in One Hour Photo, saying that, you know, this is really somebody putting clear blue water between what we know them for doing and what they can do. So I think Foxcatcher is great. And I would say that if you don't know the story of Foxcatcher, don't look it up. Watch the film, because what the film does is shows you just how elegantly and eloquently Steve Carell's performance leads you from point A to point
neuf. He's almost unrecognizable, actually. Because everyone had this sort of, everyone knows what Steve Carell looks like, but in this film, you go, oh,
I know,
and it's Steve Carell,
and it's also, it's funny because we've been talking about Adam Sandler. There is something about the way in which that film captures the boundary between, you know, edginess and awkwardness and horror, and edginess and awkwardness and comedy. And again, we talked about that with Rowan Atkinson, that there is a kind of tipping point that actors who have been very, very astute in comedy, so, you know, take a more dramatic turn, but they bring something with them that is a slightly dangerous element, and it works rather brilliantly in this case.
Where can I see this Foxcatcher of which you speak?
Well, it is widely available to rent or buy or stream, or there are a million different ways to watch it. But the advice that I would give you is, I know I keep repeating myself, if you don't know the story, just watch the film.
What is the story? Just remind me about that. Oh, yeah, that's right. That does work. Okay, next week, Mark is reviewing Brian and Charles. So we'd like your best robot movies. So that's a robot film, is it?
You know, that's why you get paid the top dollar, because just by reading that link, you divined that there was a robot.
It doesn't sound like a robot. Anyway, so Brian and Charles is a robot film.
You know the film Robot and Frank?
Yes.
Do you know what that's about?
Is it about a Frank person and a robot person?
It is.
There you go.
You're really good at this.
And iRobot, that's
by Robert.
Anyway, emails to the normal address, please. Correspondence
what
at conanmail.com.
Somebody accidentally, they thought they were going to see iRobot and they ended up seeing something else.
Yes, that was a couple of weeks ago.
I Am Legend. They thought I were going to see iRobot, and they saw I Am Legend. The next thing they knew, they were being chased by post-apocalyptic zombies.
Best robot movies, then? Correspondence@curbandemail.com.
Yeah. And can I just tell you, the right answer is Silent Running.
Okay, so that's now eliminated. That's one. So let's
so
move
next
on.
Week's.
So something else other than that, because there's no point in doing it. So no one write in and say that.
Somebody will write in and say they're not robots, they're drones. So when we say robot, we mean anything that fits the artificial mechanical intelligence bill.
Thank you.
Okay.
Let's see what comes in and we'll talk about it next week. Right. Take it or leave it. You decide. It's been suggested by many people. Here's Alexandra from Boston. I don't know if it's Boston Links or Boston, Massachusetts. Dear Uncut and Gems, surprised and shocked that you opted not to review what will become one of Adam Sandler's greatest performances alongside Uncut Gems, Happy Gilmore and Punch Drunk Love. Sandler is terrific as an NBA scout who attempts to prepare a talented but inexperienced Spanish player for the NBA draft. Weirdly, in our hyper-capitalist country, the ever so slightly commie draft system persists. Teams from the National Basketball Association can draft or pick players who wish to join the league. Normally, these are college players, but international players are also eligible. The worst performing teams get the first pick of the best young players. I've always thought this is a very strange, un-American kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it before.
Sandler is utterly charming and not at all annoying or creepy in this very enjoyable film. I know you don't hold much stock in aggregators, Mark, but Hustle is his highest rated film of all time by audience scores at 92%.
Yeah, we know. So, we do know instantly that all of those algorithmic scores aren't worth the paper they're not written on.
Very good. So, Alex, thank you for mentioning that. So before we go down that particular alley, tell us about this. Take it or leave it, you decide.
Yeah, so when I heard originally that it's an Adam Sandler Netflix sports movie, I have to say I didn't immediately rush to the "I'll watch that" button.
Do you have one of those?
Yeah, it's a big, big button. You just literally stops it and just smack that and you go, "I'll watch that."
Cool.
So directed by Jeremy Zagor from a screenplay by Taylor Mutton and Will Fetters. And the story, which I think has already been covered rather sort of fully in that email, is that he is a scout who is out looking for talent. What he wants to do is he wants to spend more time at home and he wants to get a job coaching. And just at the point that it appears that he has got that opportunity is snatched away from him. He's sent back out on the road. And then he finds a player in his, you know, worldwide travels. He finds a player who's basically playing on the streets and he thinks, okay, this is my ticket to getting home. This is my ticket to getting the job that
enables
me.
It's like Colonel Tom Parker looking at Elvis.
Well, except slightly less like an evil Elmer Fudd. The thing it did remind me of, actually, weirdly enough, is there's a touch of Jerry Maguire. And there's a gag because the guy that he finds is called Bo Cruz. And he then makes a he makes a whole joke about, yeah, I'm going to sign, you're going to be Cruise Missile. That's what you're going to be. And I wasn't having any of it. And of course, Tom Cruise is in Jerry Maguire. I'm sure that's nothing other than coincidental, because Jerry Maguire was a similar thing, which was a sport. I think he was an agent in Jerry Maguire, wasn't he? And he's out on his uppers. And what was the Jerry Maguire tagline? Everybody loved him, everybody left, or everybody disappeared. And he's suddenly left with Cuba Gooding Jr., who, remember, famously won the Oscar, the Show Me the Money performance. Remember when Cuba Gooding Jr. received the Oscar and he did one of the best Oscar acceptance speeches ever? He literally jumped up and down for joy and it was absolutely fabulous. He went, that's how you receive an Oscar.
Okay.
Anyway, so in the case of this, Sandler is playing a character who is down on his luck, has got a desire to be back at home with his wife and child, but can't unless he manages to pull this thing off. So there's a slight edge of sadness and desperation about it. And actually, I thought it was really enjoyable. It was really well done. It was interesting. After having watched it, I went back and I watched the Independent Spirit Award acceptance speech that he gave after he won for Uncut Gems. And we should mention as well that you and I have done a recorded commentary for Punch Drunk Love, which mm-hmm. people will be able to access very soon.
As an extra take.
That's like take 28 or something. Yep. And so we just recorded that a week or so ago. So you and I have been watching an Adam Sandler performance that was terrific. And of course, I'm not a huge fan of Adam Sandler's comedies by any means, but I absolutely love Punch Drunk Love. When he won the Independent Spirit Award for Uncut Gems, the first thing he did was he said, you know, it's lovely to be here. The host is Aubrey Plaza. He said, I did a movie entitled Funny People with Aubrey Plaza 11 years ago. That was the last time critics pretended not to hate me for 11 years. Catch you in another 11 years. Also, shout out to my fellow nominees who will now be known forever as the guys who lost to Adam Sandler, which is a really, really good gag.
Good.
And what I was saying was that in Punch Drunk Love, there is a thing about there's a dangerous element to Steve Carell. There's a dangerous element to Adam Sandler, which Punch Drunk Love absolutely taps into, that he's got this nervous, awkward energy. And that's why the film works, because Paul Thomas Anderson focuses in on that and turns it into something really tangibly lovable whilst also being dangerous on screen. In the case of Uncut Gems, there's that panickiness, that the sense that the whole film is like having a panic attack. I think you had the same experience of first watching it a year or so ago, however long ago it was, that it is like a kind of rising panic attack, and his manner, his demeanor is the thing that carries that through. Well, here what you get is a sense of somebody who's the dangerous element has gone, and what you're left with is the pathos. You're left with somebody who is out on the road, desperately wanting to get a ticket back home, constantly looking at the world as if expecting to be hit, as if expecting to be slapped down, as if expecting to be snubbed. And there's an awful lot of scenes in which Adam Sandler does a thing that Adam Sandler does particularly well, which is awkwardly reacting to people around him whilst trying to maintain a smile, but also seeing things falling apart. And somehow in this performance, he does all of those things. And I know that the film is basically not a super serious drama, but it is grounded by the fact that I completely believed in his character's predicament. I say this as somebody who has no knowledge of or interest in the sport. Queen Latifah is fabulous as his wife, incidentally. And one of the reasons that you buy into the film is that you buy into their relationship. You buy into them as a couple that you absolutely believe in. The film is full of NBA stars and veterans that I have never heard of, either playing characters or playing themselves. The main guy that he finds, Bo Cruz, is Juancho Hernan Gomez, who, again, I wouldn't know, because I remember watching William Friedkin's Blue Chips how many years ago, and that had like Shaquille O'Neal in it. I didn't know who Shaquille O'Neal was at that point either. And that was an interesting case, because when that film came out, it went to number 3 in the States when it came out. And I think it actually went straight to video back then in the UK, because the assumption was nobody in the UK will watch a film about basketball because nobody in the UK cares about basketball. This is an example of a movie that is about a sporting predicament, but is nothing to do with understanding or loving the sport. There's a number of gags in which Adam Sandler's character says how much he hates soccer, which is what I believe they call what we call football. It doesn't matter what the sport is, because really what it's about is this guy wanting to get home and just constantly hoping that the next step will enable this to happen. And it's a, you know, it's a dramedy, as the people now say. You know, it's a drama with some comedic elements, but it's a drama. And actually, I thought Adam Sandler was really terrific in it. And I said, I don't know anything about those, you know, the percentage things, because I think that those are all rubbish. But I thought Hustle was a really solid movie with a very, very good performance by him and a very good performance by Queen Latifah.
And where can I find Hustle?
You can find it on Netflix. I have a button which just says find Hustle on Netflix, and there it is.
All right. So straightforward Netflix.
Straightforward Netflix.
I don't have to pay any extra money. If I'm subscribing, then I'm already
You've already paid.
Okay.
In so many ways.
Yes, that's very true. If you have a suggestion for something in the many screens and options that we have that we might have missed, because basically we're all missing loads of stuff.
Because there is an infinite amount of stuff out there.
And just when you think you've subscribed to every channel going, you then discover there's 1,000 that you haven't. And if there's something brilliant which you're loving and you'd want to spread the word, then let us know, correspondence@kermanandmayo.com. Options for physical product of the month include Mr. Bean's Holiday, Phantom of the Open, The Secrets of Dumbledore, Cinderella Drive My Car, and The Bad Guys.
Cinderella Drive My Car.
Yes, that would be another thing altogether. Amtrivel on our Twitter, I watched Memoria at the South Bank because it opened on my birthday, and I think it's one of the best viewing experiences I've ever had. It's so slow, beautiful, and contemplative by the...
Contemplative.
By the time I left the screening, I felt like I was in a trance. Drive My Car is also great. Will Buckner says, Memoria, as I love director Joe's previous films. I haven't seen this yet, but the interviews on the special features look like essential viewing. Also, The Seventh Curse from @88films. This looks like amazing horror comedy from Hong Kong. Russell Stafford, Phantom of the Open, laugh out loud funny and yet beautifully sad at times. So this is something that we're going to buy and own and treasure and maybe lend.
Yes.
What is our PPOTM?
Well, I'm going to go for two choices. Firstly, I am going to go for Memoria, Apachatpong Rastakal, a.k.a. Joe, with a terrific central performance by Tilda Swinton. Love Tilda Swinton, love Apachatpong Rastakal, and really, really well worth seeing, and probably wasn't seen by enough people in cinemas. I'm also going to go for Drive My Car, and for this reason. When I saw Drive My Car, I thought it was too long. And I then reviewed it here in the show. And I said there were very good things about it, but I found it too long. I then absolutely fell in love with the soundtrack album, which I thought was just such a joy.
Did you play it on Scala?
I did play it on Scala. In fact, I played it on hard repeat on Scala. It was like over and over and over again.
I think you should have been told to stop then.
No, because it's like, you know, because it is brilliant. And one of the things that I think about the physical media thing is that you can go back and you can revisit things that perhaps you didn't fully give the time to that they should have had at the time. So I think that I will go back on the strength of having absolutely loved Eiko Ishibashi's score, which and played it so much that I think now watching the movie again and now knowing just how long it is and understanding, you know, why it is at the first segment, like the titles don't appear on the film for like the first 50 minutes or something. Now having understood the geography of the film more than I did when I first saw it, I think I will feel very differently about it. So although I liked it the first time around, I did think it was overstretched. I suspect that I won't think that the second time around. So my two picks are Drive My Car, because in my case, I need to reassess it. And Memoria, because I think more people need to see it.
Thank you very much. That's it for take two. I think there's going to be a take three along as well, because we're going to spoil everything talking about Elvis.
There's so much stuff.
I mean, the value that we're offering.
And then there's the Punch Drunk Love watch along.
Which hasn't even arrived
yet. It hasn't even dropped yet. We've recorded it, though.
I don't know how it all works. Anyway, so look out, because there'll be something else dropping very shortly.